Welcome back to the Deep Dive. It is Thursday, February 5th, 2026, and I have to be honest, looking at the stack of research for today, I'm getting a serious case of whiplash.
It's a disorienting week, isn't it?
Disorienting is, putting it mildly, I mean, I'm looking at the iGaming LODJ reports from this morning, and on one page we have the metaverse concept just hitting this peak absurd maturity.
Where everything just works.
Exactly. And then I turn the page and the business side of the industry looks like it's absolutely imploding.
It creates this fascinating, almost cruel tension. You have the consumer experience, which, you know, technologically speaking has never been better or frankly weirder.
Right.
And that's clashing with the back end reality where studios are collapsing and supply chains are still, I mean, they're practically knotted tight.
Yes. It's like the front of the house is having this huge party and the kitchen is on fire.
That's a great way to put it.
So our mission today is to walk through this February edition and figure out if the house is actually burning down or if this is just, you know, the new normal. We've got Fortnite culture clashes, the reality of cloud gaming finally delivering on the promise, and some really, really grim news for Kickstarter backers.
And we need to cut through the noise here. It's not enough to just say Studio X closed. We need you to look at why these models are failing while others, like, say, what we're seeing with Xbox, are actually pivoting successfully.
So let's start with the party at the front of the house. We have to talk about Fortnite.
We have to.
Because tomorrow, February 6th, the K-pop Demon Hunter set drops. And I was looking at the leaked assets in the report. Have you seen these?
They are hard to miss.
It's this intense visual overload. You've got this high fashion, polished, idol industry aesthetic, you know, perfect hair, designer fabrics. But then they're strapped with these gritty, supernatural, demon-slaying weapons.
It's glossy pop meets dark fantasy.
Yeah, it's a striking combination. But what really stands out to me isn't just the design itself, it's the timing.
The context.
Exactly, the context. Because we are deep in Chapter 7, Season 1, and who is the current headline collaboration?
South Park.
South Park. That is what I can't get over. You are going to load into a lobby tomorrow, and you're going to see a hyper-realistic K-pop idol cranking 90s right next to a cel-shaded 2D Kenny or Cartman.
The visual dissonance is absolute. It sounds completely ridiculous, but from a business strategy perspective,
I don't know.
It's actually brilliant.
See, that's where I get skeptical. Is it brilliant or is it just throwing everything at the wall to see what sticks? It feels like an immersion nightmare.
If you look at it through the lens of like traditional game design, yes, it's a nightmare. Epic isn't building a game anymore. They're building an identity economy.
An identity economy.
They're not just selling skins.
Yeah.
They are leveraging distinct, massive online communities.
Yeah.
You have the K-pop fandom, which is arguably the most organized digital force on the planet.
Oh, easily.
And you mash them against the satirical, too cool for school South Park demographic.
So it's about cross-pollination, bringing in different groups.
It's about retention through contrast. If the game is only South Park, it becomes a joke game. It feels ephemeral. By dropping the K-pop Demon Hunters, which come with the whole suite, the back blames, the tools, they re-anchor the cool factor.
Okay.
The K-pop fan logs in for the skin, but stays for the gameplay loop. The hardcore gamer tolerates the idols because, well, those sales are subsidizing the servers they play on.
So it effectively balances the ecosystem. You need the cool to offset the cringe and maybe vice versa.
Precisely. It keeps the metaverse feeling infinite rather than niche.
Well, speaking of infinite possibilities versus some very hard limits, let's shift to the hardware news.
Okay.
Because while software is getting wilder, the physical box under your TV is having a rough week. Specifically, Valve.
Ah, the Steam Machine update.
We've been tracking this for months. Everyone's waiting for the new Steam Machine, the Steam Controller 2. And Valve finally broke their silence this week with a sort of good news, bad news update.
And the bad news feels pretty significant.
It really does.
It depends on how you interpret silence, I guess. So, Valve confirmed that physically, production is on track. The devices exist, the factories are running, but they explicitly delayed the announcement of the pricing and the release dates.
And that's usually a red flag, right? When a tech giant says, we have the product, but we won't tell you what it costs, it usually means they're terrified of the number they have to put on the sticker.
That is the likely scenario. I mean, we have to look at the supply chain notes in the LODJ report. Shipping logistics, component yields, especially for those custom APUs they're using, are fluctuating wildly right now.
So it's not that they can't price it, it's that they can't price it safely.
Exactly. Margins on hardware are razor thin. If Valve announces a, say, $499 price point today, but shipping costs spike 15% in 3 months, they're suddenly selling every unit at a massive loss.
So they're waiting.
They're waiting for the volatility to settle so they don't bankrupt the project before it even launches.
Which is frustrating for, you know, for you trying to budget for the holidays, but it makes business sense. But here's the contrast I mentioned. Valve is struggling to get a box to your door, but Microsoft just decided you don't need the box at all.
The February 2026 update to stream your own game. This is a pivotal moment.
This feels like the Play Anywhere dream finally growing up. Back in 2025, they let you stream games you owned, but the library was tiny. Now, they just dumped 40 major titles into the program.
And we aren't talking Solitaire.
No, we're talking Final Fantasy VII Remake, Resident Evil Village, Z Version, Divinity, Original Sin 2.
These are heavy, demanding titles. Final Fantasy requires precise timing. Resident Evil is all about atmosphere and reaction speed.
So how are they doing this? Because historically, cloud gaming has been, well, let's be honest, laggy trash. You press jump and the character jumps the half second later.
The round trip problem. But the tech has shifted. The report mentions the integration of new edge computing nodes in the 5G infrastructure.
Okay, break that down for us. Edge computing.
So in the old model, your phone sends a signal to a massive data center in, say, Virginia. It processes the frame, sends it back to you in California. That takes time milliseconds that add up to what we feel is lag.
Got it.
Edge computing moves the processing power closer to you. It puts a server at the cell tower or the local exchange.
So the trip is shorter.
Much shorter. We're seeing latency drop from, you know, 50, 60 milliseconds down to sub 10 milliseconds.
Yeah.
That is the threshold where the human brain stops noticing the delay.
That explains why Final Fantasy is playable. But the strategy shift here is interesting, too. This isn't Game Pass, right?
No, and that is the so what here. For years, the industry pushed subscriptions, rent the catalog. But this move incentivizes ownership.
Oh, right.
You have to buy the digital copy of Resident Evil to stream it.
It's a genius pivot. They're saying, you don't need to buy our console, but you do need to buy into our software ecosystem. It bridges the gap between console and mobile without forcing you to buy a Steam Deck or a Switch.
It decouples the ecosystem from the plastic box. If you own the game digitally, the world is your screen.
Of course, that only works if the game you're playing isn't miserable. And if you've been playing Black Ops 7 or Warzone ranked play lately, miserable is a polite word for it.
The cheater problem.
It's been brutal. Rage hack aimbots beaming people across the map. But Activision says the cavalry is coming with the Ricochet update, and they're throwing around this term, server-side heuristics.
This is a significant evolution in anti-cheat.
Let's decode heuristics, because usually anti-cheat is just looking for a bad program on my PC, right? Like a sniffer dog.
Correct. That's signature-based detection. Is program X running? But heuristics is different. Imagine a teacher watching a student take a test. The teacher can't see a cheat sheet. But they notice the student is answering questions in 3 seconds flat without reading them and getting 100%.
So the teacher knows they're cheating, even if they can't prove how.
Exactly. Heuristics analyzes behavior and statistical probability. It looks at the data coming into the server. So, for example, recoil control.
Right.
Every gun has a random recoil pattern. A human can compensate, but they can't be perfect.
Yeah.
If a player's crosshair stays perfectly on one pixel for 30 bullets... Statistically, that's impossible for a human hand.
Or the magnetic aim. I've seen that.
Right. If the crosshair snaps to a target's head in one frame, bypassing the space in between, the server knows that input wasn't analog.
Yeah.
It wasn't a thumb on a stick or a hand on a mouse. It was code.
And the best part is they aren't just banning these people instantly. They're implementing the damage shield mitigation.
I absolutely love this. It's psychological warfare.
It's hilarious. Explain what happens to the cheater.
So the server detects the impossible behavior, but instead of kicking the player, it turns off their bullet damage against real players. The cheater is shooting you, they're getting hit markers, the sound effects are playing, but you take zero damage.
Can you just turn around and look at them?
It humiliates them. It wastes their time. But more importantly, it protects the integrity of the match. And that brings us to the core theme here, which is trust. If you don't trust that the person killing you is actually better than you, you stop playing.
Yeah.
Ranked play relies entirely on the illusion of fair competition.
And once that trust is broken, the community evaporates, which is a perfect, if depressing, segue to our final segment, We've talked about trusting game mechanics, but what happens when you can't trust the people making the game?
We are heading into the dark side of the report now.
We have to talk about Ashes of Creation.
The Dark Monday reports.
Yeah. For those who haven't been following the saga for the last, what, 7 years? Ashes of Creation was the Kickstarter darling. Stephen Sharif sold us a dream. He promised this node system.
The node system.
The idea that if enough players gathered in a village, it would organically grow into a city, unlocking dungeons and content, all without the developers lifting a finger.
It was supposed to be the evolution of the MMORPG, the World of Warcraft killer, that was actually dynamic.
And now we have reports from Intrepid Studios that are just devastating. Mass layoffs, operations potentially ceasing entirely, but it's the silence that gets me.
The silence is the loudest part.
Why? Why not just say we're delayed again?
Because in corporate dissolutions, silence usually means the lawyers are here. If it was a development hurdle, they'd post a roadmap. If it was restructuring, they would spin it as optimizing. But total radio silence amidst these reports. It usually implies the money is gone and there is significant liability.
Oh, wow.
They're likely being told not to speak to avoid incriminating themselves or worsening a lawsuit from backers.
And we're talking about millions of dollars of backer money.
It highlights the extreme risk of crowdfunding feature creep. They promised everything. Naval combat, sieges, dynamic economies, breeding mechanics. They tried to build a simulation of a world before they built a fun game.
It's the dream collapsing under its own weight. But Ashes isn't alone. We have another collapse happening in real time, but this one is with a game that actually launched. Highguard.
Highguard by Wildlight Entertainment. Yeah, this is a tragedy of a different sort.
The numbers here are shocking. I had to double check this. The player base dropped by 80% within 1 week of launch.
1 week. That is a cliff, not a decline.
So they're scrambling. The report says they are pivoting to make the 5v5 raid mode permanent. Why that move?
Desperation mixed with data. The 5v5 mode was a limited time event, but it was the only thing the community responded positively to. The main game was apparently just this chaotic mess of ability spam.
No tactics.
No tactical depth. The 5v5 mode stripped that away. It was tighter. It rewarded mechanical skill.
But they're listening to the fans. That's usually a good thing, right? No Man's Sky came back. Cyberpunk came back. Can Highguard do it?
That is the comparison everyone makes. But there's a fatal flaw in that logic. No Man's Sky and Cyberpunk are single-player or co-op experiences. You can play them alone while the devs fix things.
Right. Highguard is PvP.
Highguard is a PvP hero shooter. It needs bodies in the lobby. It relies on a healthy population for matchmaking.
Oh, I see.
When you lose 80% of your players, queue times skyrocket. And when a match finally pops, the quality is terrible because the system has to match a diamond player with a bronze player just to fill the server.
Which makes the bronze player quit because they get stomped. And the diamond player quit because they're bored.
It is the death spiral. Once the population dips below a certain threshold, the game degrades functionally. So while pivoting to 5v5 is the right design choice, it might be too late to generate the velocity needed to escape that gravity well.
Man, it really is a tale of two industries today.
It is.
So let's try to synthesize this for everyone listening. On one side, we have the technology hitting a golden age 5G edge computing, letting you stream Final Fantasy without lag, AI heuristics catching cheaters by analyzing their impossible movements.
And culturally, you have the metaverse actually working, blending K-pop and gaming into these massive functional economies.
But on the other side, the business models are creaking. We're seeing that hype is not a business plan. Whether it's a Kickstarter promising a living world or a shooter banking on being the next big thing, the market is ruthless right now.
That is the takeaway. Being an informed gamer in 2026 means looking past the trailer. It means understanding that a delayed price from Valve is a supply chain warning light.
Right.
It means understanding that a new anti-cheat isn't just software. It's a statistical analysis engine.
And it means being very, very careful where you put your trust and your money.
Skepticism is the most valuable attribute a gamer can have right now.
I want to leave everyone with a final thought to mull over. We watched Ashes of Creation, a project with basically infinite money and time reportedly evaporate. We watch Highguard lose almost its entire audience in 7 days.
These aren't small failures. These are catastrophic implosions.
So the question is this. Is the era of the massive live service game finally popping? Can the industry actually sustain this many forever games? Or are we watching the bubble burst in real time because we simply don't have enough time or money to play them all?
That is the multi-billion dollar question.
Something to think about while you're waiting in that Fortnite lobby, staring at a K-pop star fighting Cartman. Thanks for diving in with us.
Until next time.
See you then.